Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. As The Spot is a place for showcasing stories from podcasts that don't have a home on the radio dial, the new podcast, Showcase, is a program that creates a space for podcast ideas that don't necessitate their own endless podcast feed. Plus, it's made by the curatorial powers that be at the Radiotopia Network, so not too shabby. The first season of Showcase is titled Ways of Hearing, a 6-episode series about listening in the digital age from acclaimed musician Damon Krukowski, who you might know from the hit indie bands Galaxy 500 and Damon and Naomi. The first episode of the series focuses on time, and it really helps me understand just why and how digital music recordings annoy me so dang much.
The first record I made was all analog. It wasn't a choice. That's just how it was done in the 80s. My friends and I lived in an all-analog world. There were no computers in our lives. That didn't feel weird. It would have been weird if there had been. At the time, computers were something you saw on TV during a moonshot.
15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
You saw people sitting at computers at NASA Mission Control.
Ignition sequence start.
Making a record wasn't anything like a moonshot. It didn't use numbers. It didn't use data.
1, 0, all engine running.
Not that there was no technology involved. The tape decks, mixing board, microphones, they all seemed very magical. But they were made of magnets, gears, motors, electricity, like all the mechanical objects in our lives then. And so, my bandmates and I set up our instruments in the studio, we counted off, and we played our songs. In many ways, it's simply nostalgia to think that it was so different. People are people, sounds are sounds, and our technology is always changing. Still, there's something particular about that analog experience, which seems hard to conjure back up in the digital present. And for that very reason, it feels important to try. In that analog studio, there was a feeling when the tape started rolling that this was the moment we would capture, a feeling of time moving both more slowly and more quickly than usual. Like when you're in an accident, each split second is suddenly so palpable, as if you're living in slow motion. Yet what do we say when it's over? It all happened in an instant. Analog recording is like an accident in other ways. On tape, there was no undo. You could try again if you had the time and money, but you couldn't move backwards. What's done is done, for better and worse. Today, life as a musician is very different. In the digital studio, and I'm using one now, everything you do is provisional. That is, it can be redone, reshaped, rebuilt. There's no commitment, because each element of a recording can be endlessly changed. It can even be conjured from digital scratch, as it were, and entered into a computer directly as data, without anyone performing at all. This means there's no moment from lived experience that is captured forever, and unalterably so, in the digital studio. Which is why it's more than nostalgia that makes me remember the analog studio as different than what we know today. Because the digital era has not just altered our tools for working with sound, or image, or moving images. It is changing our relationship to time itself. This is Ways of Hearing, a six-part podcast from Radiotopia's Showcase, exploring the nature of listening in our digital world. I'm Damon Krukowski, a musician and a writer. In each episode, we'll look at a different way that the switch from analog to digital audio is changing our perceptions of time, of space, of love, money, and power. This is about sound, the medium we're sharing together now. But I'm worried about the quality of that sharing, because we don't seem to be listening to each other very well right now in the world. Our voices carry further than they ever did before, thanks to digital media. But how are they being heard? Episode 1, Time. Musicians know time is flexible. Classical players call this tempo rubato, Italian for stolen time. You steal a bit here, give a bit back there. Jazz players call it swing. Rock and funk players call it groove. This flexibility of time is something we're all familiar with, whether or not we play an instrument. There's the time it takes for dawn to arrive while you lay awake after a nightmare, and there's the time it takes when you're out all night with your friends. What musicians' terms like rubato, swing, and groove acknowledge is that time is experienced, not counted like a clock. And our experience of time is variable. It's always changing. Even if our eyes look at a clock and see 12 equal hours, our ears are ready to steal a bit here, give a bit back there. And the analog media we use to reproduce sound, records and tapes, reflect this variable sense of time, a time that's elastic. The first turntables, Victrolas, were hand-cranked. You wound up a spring, which spun the platter as it wound down. The speed was hardly steady, at least never for long. At the opposite end of the 20th century, hip-hop DJs used speed controls on turntables to change the tempo of a record, to match it to another and keep the groove going, or, in the studio, to pile up samples from older records and make a new one. In 1990, A Tribe Called Quest sampled the bass from Walk on the Wild Side, along with the surface noise from the LP, added it to a drum loop from a Lonnie Smith LP, and made a new hit out of it. They also had to give up on collecting any royalties.
One of the biggest samples that we were able to clear was the Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed. And by clearing that, he just took 100% of that song.
Wait, really?
He did.
Well, wait, you're saying Lou Reed gets 100%?
That's Ali Shaheed Muhammad from A Tribe Called Quest and Franny Kelly. They host a podcast about hip-hop called Microphone Check.
Yeah, that's his song.
Ali, I always thought, you know, my band Galaxy 500, we ripped off the Velvet Underground way more than you did. And we didn't have to pay them a dime.
I asked Ali how Tribe used the variable speed of turntables to make their own records.
No, sometimes we would change the speed on the turntable, but because the staple hip-hop turntable is the Technics 1200, and so that has a pitch control. We would sometimes pitch it high there, sometimes a 33 RPM record, you put it on 45. And one thing with Tribe, we layered certain sounds, and so you kind of had to pitch them because often they weren't in the same key.
Layering these sounds, A Tribe Called Quest discovered something else about their samples.
The records we were recording, they might not have been playing to a metronome, and it was free-flowing, so there are moments within, let's say, even a two-bar phrase that maybe a drummer or a bass player like were aligned in the first two bars and the tempo seemed to be consistent, and then the last three beats of a bar, it sped up or slowed down.
In 1988, the songs my bandmates and I recorded slowed down and sped up, just like Ali Shaheed described. I know, because I was the drummer. We played as steadily as we could, but this was a performance. We were nervous and excited, and we sped up at the chorus. You might find that a flaw in our recordings, or you might feel it's a part of their charm. Musicians have been speeding up at the chorus for as long, I'm sure, as there have been choruses. Our experience of time is flexible. But not long after we recorded that first Galaxy 500 album, the commercial music world, for the most part, decided that this was most definitely a flaw. Bands on major labels, even bands who came out of our DIY indie scene, started recording to a click track, that is, a metronome. Fashions in music come and go. At the time, everyone was also using the swirling effect called a flanger. No one remembers why. But the click track proved more than a fad. It was a change that stuck. Because what truly changed in popular music during the 1980s was that digital machines entered the mix for the first time. And machines have a different sense of time. The first drum machines to be widely used in commercial recordings were introduced in 1980. And MIDI, Musical Instrument Digital Interface, the language machines use to share musical information with one another, was launched in 1983. Together, these tools can lock musical time to a clock, which doesn't speed up at the chorus. When Galaxy 500 recorded, we played our songs in what audio engineers now refer to as real time. Real time, as the name implies, is lived time, time as we experience it in the analog world. Digital time is not lived time. It's machine time. It's locked to a clock. And that clock, a time code, makes everything more regular than lived time. Time in the digital studio is stored in discrete cells on a grid, like figures on a spreadsheet. And if you've ever worked with a spreadsheet, you know those cells can be sorted any which way and refigured to most any desired outcome. What this means is that a given experience of digital time is only one among many equally plausible experiences. Take this podcast you're listening to. Since this is a digital medium, you could choose to hurry me up without changing the pitch of my voice, seemingly without changing any of my words or pronunciation, which means I can be equally fast, speaking at 1.5 times my normal pace, like I'm manic, or I can be equally slow, speaking at 3/4 normal pace, like I'm drunk. Neither need be how this happened in real time. In fact,
none of this need ever have happened, in the sense that we understood that term in 1988.
That's a track made entirely by software. The singer is a program made by Yamaha called Vocaloid. Vocaloid tracks have been cropping up on the Japanese pop charts for a number of years and are now making their way into other forms of music around the world. As for podcasts, Adobe is developing a program called Voco that will read text aloud for you in your own voice. What could possibly go wrong? Making time conform to machines, making it regular, would seem to make it more unified, like a standardized timeline that any of us can tap into at any moment. But there's a surprising twist to digital time. It's actually very difficult to synchronize. It's a challenge in digital recording to line up the different layers that make up a song. If you play a guitar into a digital recorder and then play it back and add singing, your voice won't line up with the music exactly the way you performed it. The reason is what's called latency. Latency is the lag in digital communications introduced by the time it takes a computer to process them. Computers move very fast. That's what computers are good at. But analog time, it seems, moves faster. Let's consider an example from outside music. That's the radio voice of the Boston Red Sox, Joe Castiglione.
I don't have a signature home run call because all the good ones were taken. Mel Allen going, going, gone.
Going, it's gone.
Bye, bye, baby. Russ Hodges.
Bye, bye, baby.
At times I've used forget about it because you know it's gone. Some fans didn't like that. I said, we don't forget about it. It's a big home run. Well, the role of the broadcaster is to describe what you see and what is happening as it happens. That's why we broadcast in the present tense.
Smarja deals, and it's in there for a call strike.
You can't be too soon. Anticipate, because you can get burned that way. Sometimes the ball doesn't carry as far as you think it's going to, or sometimes it carries farther. You can always tell if a broadcast is behind the action. If the crowd's cheering and you're still building up to what's happening. You have to be quick. You have to be current. You have to be right on time.
Joe is such an important voice here in Boston. It used to be common practice to watch baseball games on TV, but with the sound off and the radio on. So we could watch the game, but listen to Joe. And then a strange thing happened. On June 12, 2009, Joe started calling the plays before we saw them on TV. That's because on that day, every TV station in the U.S. switched from analog to digital transmission. And that lag in the digital television image, the gap between it and the real time of the game, as Joe was calling it, that is latency. It takes time for computers to translate the world into data. And translating data to analog so we can perceive it slows things down, enough to put the tag after the call by Joe Castiglione.
Tucker's throw through in time, and he's out. Took a second hop. But
there was an old saying in radio, when you read it, it's history. When you hear it, it's news. And we're ahead of the satellite picture on TV, so we are first. And I think the immediacy of radio is something that is so critical and so germane to it.
Back before digital broadcast, that immediacy was audible in the city. You always knew when there was a home run at Fenway because you heard a simultaneous collective cheer all around Boston from every open window and passing car.
Can you believe it?
Today, those shouts are staggered. We get a splattering of cheers, like scatter points on a graph.
Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
That's because latency is different, slightly different, but different, on each digital device receiving its own particular stream of digital information. Professional music producers and engineers in the digital studio worry about latency all the time. The lag it introduces can be very, very small, and yet it's always there, and always threatening to knock the different layers of a song out of sync with one another. If a young drummer today manages to cast a wide net around the beat, perhaps that's not so different from my own speeding up and slowing down on Galaxy 500 recordings. It may be a flaw, or it may be part of the charm. Yet there's something very distinct about an experience of analog time, time that flexes, slower and quicker. Tempo rubato. And this feeling of blurred time from latency. For one, I can't think of a musical term for latency. Perhaps because it's not like anything we experience in lived time. However, this experience of latency is typical of life online. For all our seemingly instant and global digital communications, life online is in practice filled with chronological confusions. Social media like Facebook and Twitter shuffle posts according to various algorithms, most obviously popularity. The net result being that yesterday's news bulletin can interrupt today's string of think pieces about it. Texting, too, is often tripped up by crossed posts or missed posts or abrupt silences, followed by 10 bings in a row. Temporal hiccups in information exchange that would never happen face to face. in conversation, in real analog time. We can gauge reaction to our statements before anything further is said. We can pause without lapsing into silence, and we can fall silent without ending the conversation. Digital time is time designed for machines. We benefit in all kinds of ways from the convenience that makes possible. But those conveniences come at a sacrifice. Because when we trade broadcast for podcast, we give up the opportunity to experience time together in the same instant through our media. And when we trade real time for machine time in music, we lose the ability to share our individual timing with one another. Musicians use rubato, swing, and groove to move us together, not locked to a machine, but to one another. Analog time is flexible but unified. We share it so easily, without tinkering with technology, without even thinking about it. Maybe that's why we seem to be surrendering it so quickly. But without it, it's harder to share a moment in time together. Like those moments I once shared with my bandmates in a recording studio, in a particular place at a particular time, on West Broadway, just south of Canal, in New York City, 1988. This is Ways of Hearing. In the next episode, I'll take a trip to today's New York and look at the effect of digital sound on our perception of space. Thank you for listening. Ways of Hearing is a production of Showcase from Radiotopia and PRX. Produced by me, Damon Krukiewski, Max Larkin, and Ian Koss, with sound design by Ian Koss. Our executive producer is Julie Shapiro. Thanks to Alex Bronstein and the PRX Podcast Garage. Our theme song is Trickle Down by Robert Wyatt. Find out more about Ways of Hearing at radiotopia.fm/showcase.
Ways of Hearing is the first series from Radiotopia's Showcase, a new podcast featuring original series of all stripes from producers around the world. Next up for Showcase, the story of a decades-old urban legend about a mysterious arcade game from the 80s. Keep up with Ways of Hearing, Showcase, and all of the cutting-edge podcasts from the Radiotopia family at radiotopia.fm. You're tuned to The Spot, KALW's weekly showcase of the best stories made by indie radio and podcast producers. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. I really enjoy Ways of Hearing because it gives examples that support my unwavering opinion that recording and listening digitally pales in comparison to analog. It vindicates me for my grumpiness. But then, another more optimistic part of my brain will chime in with examples of how I've been surprised by the ways digital technologies allow us to connect over music and recorded sounds quicker and anywhere at any moment. For instance, a silent disco. You may have seen one before, a few dozen people, headphones on and dancing around to music only they can hear. I scoffed when I first saw them, but participants swear up and down that it's fun and they feel connected to those around them, like having the most enjoyable shared secret possible. From KFAI in Minneapolis, a sonic profile that demonstrates how listening digitally, alone together, might be a great thing to do.
Here on Nicollet Mall in downtown Minneapolis, most people are walking briskly during evening rush hour, but some can't help but notice that something unusual is happening.
I'm just seeing a lot of people dancing to their Walkmans.
I think we have a record number of headphone dancers today.
Yeah, so I really, can you tell me what's going on?
All this mystery, it's by design.
I love the word mystery.
That's artist Marcus Young. He's in his mid-40s and is tall and slim with a shock of black hair. Most weeks, except in the dead of winter, he hosts this event called Don't You Feel It Too? It's where people of all ages put on headphones and come out to dance to their favorite music, on Nicollet Mall, in public, and in front of total strangers.
I'm looking around. Is it the first time for anybody?
Oh, it is. All right.
Awesome.
Young says that public dancing and embarrassing yourself on purpose, it can be really useful.
So we are trying to build courage. It's also just having fun in a very scary way, because it's scary to dance in front of people.
Don't You Feel It Too has its roots during a period that was really tense for a lot of people. This was back in 2008. It was the year of the Republican National Convention that took place in St. Paul. Public spaces for demonstrating were pretty limited, and so Young and his friends came up with an idea.
We really wanted to be in the thick of things, in the heart of the matter. And so we decided to come up with a form where we could practice being honestly who we are in a very mysterious way.
So they started dancing on the sidewalk. People didn't know what to make of them. The police took some pictures, but Young and his friends kept dancing. And while Don't You Feel It Too started out as an experiment in political protest in St. Paul, it's evolved into a weekly public ritual in Minneapolis.
So, push play, warm up.
At a recent practice, about 24 people fan out across a concrete courtyard to warm up. They look like a school of dancing fish.
Are there any questions before we start?
Yeah.
What do we say if people stop us?
Thank you, that's right. So if someone says, what the heck are you doing, you know? All you say is the title of the piece, which is, Don't You Feel It Too? Yeah. That's it.
Keeping things a little mysterious? Young says that's at the heart of it.
So part of the reason it's called Don't You Feel It Too is because it's naming what you can't name. We want to leave them in that mystery. For us, it's a gift to not know everything.
That gift of not knowing, it was pretty well received by most of the bystanders I spoke with.
It makes me feel like a free spirit. It's open. It's free. It's fresh. yeah, I'm excited.
But others, they wanted an explanation.
I want to know what's going on. I want to know why they're laying down. Are they just resting or are they protesting?
The practice can also be mysteriously transformative for the people who do it. 25-year-old Matt Huang has been coming for the last year. He says he can't imagine his life without it.
I am a slightly anxious person and social anxiety as well. And so, like, this has given me a certain kind of confidence, but also allowed me to, like, not think and just be for even 45 minutes out of the week.
This week was Kirsten Vigman's first time. She didn't know what it would be like. In fact, she almost didn't show up, but then she changed her mind at the very last minute.
I was surprised by how comfortable I felt.
Can you maybe extrapolate a little bit and say, is there a moral to that story then?
The moral of that story is that it's a good idea to try things even when you're afraid of them. Dive in head first, I guess.
Maybe it's not
and do it to a good song.
I'm breathing in, I'm breathing out.
For Vigman, that song would be any track off of David Byrne's album Look Into the Eyeball, which is exactly what she danced to. As for Marcus Young, he's working on a 100-year plan for Don't You Feel It Too.
It used to be a 1,000-year plan. I've just scaled it back so I don't scare as many people.
His goal is to keep the practice going long after he's hung up his dancing shoes. For KFAI, I'm Nancy Rosenbaum.
That story was produced in October 2016 for KFAI's 10,000 Fresh Voices series, which you can listen to at kfai.org. That's it for The Spot today. You can find this episode and all the rest at kalw.org. Look for Programs A to Z. If there's a podcast you'd like to nominate for broadcast, let us know by emailing thespot@kalw.org. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week, same day, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on 91.7 KALW.